Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Grey Gardens, the musical, was inspired by a documentary, won 3 Tony Awards on Broadway, and has its St. Louis premiere tonight. Steve Potter has more on the story of Jackie Kennedy's most eccentric relatives.
Max and Louis Productions brings Grey Gardens to the stage for a run through July the 30th. The musical is based on a book by Doug Wright, music by Scott Frankel, and lyrics by Michael Corey. Scott Frankel joins us on the phone from Chicago. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you, Steve. I'm very happy to be able to speak with you this afternoon.
Also in studio, we have actress Debbie Lennon. Debbie.
Hello.
Director Anna Pileggi. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Estelle Seitman. Stelly Seitman, the artistic director for Max and Louis Productions. Hi.
Hi.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
Scott, let me begin with you. Grey Gardens premiered off-Broadway back in 2006. What can you share with us about that and about the show's move to Broadway and the success that it had there?
Sure. For those people who don't know, Grey Gardens is based on a 1970s documentary film by the wonderful Albert and David Maisels, and it's a story about a first cousin and aunt of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. And I had this crazy idea to think that it might serve as the basis for a stage musical, and everyone thought I was crazy, and I probably am a little bit crazy, but it was a great project to work on. And it was developed at Playwrights Horizons, which is a wonderful off-Broadway theater in New York that has premiered such shows as Assassins and Sunday in the Park with George. And I took it to them, and they were very, very intrigued. We had a wonderful sold-out run there, and no one wanted to transfer it until the very last week of our performances, because some commercial producers saw it and fell in love with it. I think the characters in the play reminded her of her relationship with her mother, both for better or for worse, and so we were very fortunate that they moved the show to Broadway, where it ran a little bit over 300 performances.
And it won a Tony.
3, actually. Both Christine Ebersole, who originated the role of Little Edie, and Mary Louise Wilson, who originated the role of her mother, Big Edie, and William Ivy Long won for costumes as well. So yes, that was a very happy. It's always nice. The cherry on the sundae, those awards.
Well, as a composer, I believe you were nominated for a Tony, too, so congratulations on that.
Well, thank you kindly. It was a very personal project for me and a passion project for me, and it was so great to be able to develop it for those ladies and to have those historical characters. I think what they really wanted more than anything in life was to be heard and understood, since they were living as recluses. And I think both the documentary film and the musical gave them what they really craved, which was to be understood by a wider audience.
Let's talk about those characters for a second. Debbie Lennon, you play the daughter of the mother and daughter, Little Edie.
I also play the mother in the first act, Big Edie.
I know there's another actress, too, that plays you at a younger age, so maybe you could explain all that.
Yes. In Act 1, I play Edith Bouvier Beale, the mother, and my daughter is Madeline Purchase, who plays Little Edie. And this takes place in 1941, July of 1941, the day of Little Edie's intended engagement party. And in the second act, I play Little Edie at 56 years of age, taking care of her mother, Big Edie, who's also played by Donna Weinstein.
Anna Pileggi, Scott mentioned a moment ago that people thought he was crazy when he thought that this could become a musical. I've only seen the documentary myself. I have to admit, it never occurred to me that this would be the basis for a musical. Why do you think it works?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the music, which is so far-reaching in terms of style and just the emotional richness of it. After having worked on this, I can't imagine it not being a musical at this point. And I was not familiar with it before I had seen the documentary. I think that's the other thing that makes it such a rich story, is that you're able to imagine in the first act what their life must have been like, and then you see what it becomes. And it's almost Shakespearean in its scope. I mean, the journey that these women go through is enormous.
Stelly, I think everyone should see the documentary. I found it sort of it was disturbing to me.
My love affair with these women began back in 1976 in New York City at the Paris Theater. That's where I was living after I graduated Webster. I went with my pals to see the doc, and I fell in love with these defiant iconoclasts. They spoke to me, their fierce individualism, their nonconformist spirit, not to mention, you know, I have a lot of crazy relatives.
I didn't want to use
that word. Connect. Well, it's true, Steve. I do. if you're listening. Well, it's the truth.
Scott, we're going to sample some of your work as composer, and this is a piece, I think it's about the end of Act One. Will You? What's that about?
Yes. I should mention that both the mother and the daughter were frustrated performers. Big Edith had a lovely soprano voice, but was fond of breaking into song at sometimes inopportune occasions, driving particularly her father and her husband crazy. And little Edie was a kind of frustrated dancer. So Will You is a ballad that closes the first act, little Edie's engagement to Joseph Patrick Kennedy, who was John Kennedy's older brother, who was soon to be killed after the scene takes place in World War II. And her engagement party has gone horribly wrong. The mother sings a song about longing and regret. It both serves as a song that is part of her repertoire, but also has a kind of additional meaning about what it costs a mother when a child does or does not leave home.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome. Welcome to Grey Gardens. I'd like to commence our little tribute to young love with one of our all-time favorites. Gould, Will You?
When lilacs return in spring, will you? When larks in the meadow sing, will you? When clouds of a summer storm dissolve and starlight shimmers,
Max and Louis Productions presents Grey Gardens, a musical, opening tonight. On the phone, composer Scott Frankel, in studio, actress Debbie Lennon, director Anna Pileggi, and artistic director of Max and Louis, Stelly Siteman. Debbie, as a performer, talk about the music and the lyrics and your experience with that in this production.
Well, I just wanted to expound on what Anna was talking about and the richness of the score. The score is not only evokes memory, but to me it's transportative in a way like film score can be. As a musician, I love the diversity of the score. I love that it evokes the Great American Songbook in the 1940s. And I am the head of the jazz voice program at Webster University, and that's always been a specialty of mine, but also a classical singer too, and that's where my roots were. And so just the requirements of this role are sort of Herculean in that respect, being able to move in and out of a lot of different styles. And as an artist, as a singer, that is so fulfilling.
Scott, working with Michael Corey, were there any particular challenges turning this into a musical for either of you or both of you?
Yes. I mean, the question that kind of hangs over the documentary film is, how could this have happened to two women who seemingly had everything? Looks, education, money, privilege, position. There's a marvelous line in the documentary film where little Edie says, it's awfully difficult to keep the line between the past and the present, which almost sounds like it could have been a Tennessee Williams quote. In the film, the camera is able to show the past and the present in one shot. For instance, the camera will focus in on oil painting or a photograph of each woman when they were young and gorgeous and had their whole life and promise ahead of them. And then the camera pulls back and you see their current conditions, living in a squalid, decrepit mansion that's been condemned by the Board of Health. So for people who know the documentary and people who don't, it had to work for both audiences, so that became very tricky. And also, I thought particularly for people who didn't know the film, I thought it important to see what life was like for these women in their heyday in order to see what was lost 30 years later. So we came up with this notion of a first act. It's based largely on the historical record with a little bit of authorial license thrown in. But a day of engagement between little Edie and Joe Kennedy. And that takes us through in the 1941 section, almost like a movie or stage musical of the day. And then a lot happens at intermission at Grey Gardens. There's the Kennedy assassination, there's Vietnam, there's Watergate, and we meet the women again 30 years later in the same house, which is now completely run down and overrun with cats and raccoons.
Do we know why this happened to them? I mean, did the family money run out? Was it bad decisions on their part? Or were they mentally unstable?
Well, I'm going to say maybe a little bit of all three. They also had the great misfortune of being essentially bohemian spirits who were married to very straight-laced Wall Street bankers and lawyers. So that the patriarch and the husband and the sons had little patience for the kind of bohemian eccentricities of the mother and daughter. So basically, Big Edie's father, who was played on Broadway by the wonderful John McMartin, who passed away yesterday,
sadly. No.
But one of the greats. Yeah, I hope he's looking over your production. But
indeed,
you know, they cut the women off. And so the women had to live on a stipend that had to last them essentially from the 40s into the 70s. Oh. And of course, that money ran out and they refused to leave the house. The house became a real part of their identity. And so they clung to it and lived there as if it were still a wonderful, elegant residence. But in fact, it was falling apart. But that's how they found themselves in that situation.
Let's hear another piece from Grey Gardens, the musical. This is Another Winter in a Summer Town, and this is sung by which character?
This is Little Edie.
At 56, 57 years of age.
Another winter. Renters go home. The maple goes from crimson to brown. Oh God, my God, another winter in a summer time. Cover the pools, the patio umbrellas come down. Oh God, my God, another winter in a summer
And a Pelleggi, as the director, was it a concern to you, or would it have been easy to make these two, because I've seen the documentary, to make it comical or to make fun of them? Was that a concern or a danger?
Well, I mean, sure, it's a danger because they are so extreme in their behavior. But to me, there's humor throughout the piece in both acts, but it comes from the ultimate humanity of these people and their strength and courage in the face of adversity. Little Edie talks about in one of her numbers called Revolutionary Costume about her staunchness. And that's really the thing that elevates them. And the thing that most struck me about the documentary when I saw it, that they never gave in to their despair, that they always rose above that, and that they were truly survivors and were able to love one another in the face of such adversity and pain.
I'd like to give you all a final word just to sort of sum up what this project has meant. Scott Frankel, I'll start with you.
You know, I love giving voice to characters who have the ability to, well, when you turn things into musicals, the question always is, does it sing? Do these characters sing? Is something about their story, does giving voice to it elevate it? And I was struck by when Little Edie first saw a cut of the documentary film in the 70s, she was reported to have said, well, I like it, but I really wish there had been more singing and dancing. And so I take that as a kind of posthumous blessing on the project. We did propose this musical adaptation to her before she died, and she was thrilled at the very idea of it. So I think we do honor the lives and the spirit of those women in all of their complications.
And Debbie Lennon playing Little Edie?
I have had the most wonderful experience of my life and terrifying, you know, taking on this project. It was very daunting because it is, it's Herculean, the technique that you have to be able to cross the styles and the dialect, and then just the emotional toll that it can take. But it's been so satisfying to work with this amazing team.
For me, I have been so grateful to work with such a rich piece with some of the most amazing artists I've ever had the pleasure of working with here in St. Louis.
Well, for me, you know, the stories of marginalized people who exist outside of convention can tell us a lot about ourselves. And the story has resonance for me, you know. In a brave, uncensored way, the two Beale women show us the most comprehensive, resonant, heartbreaking relationship of any mother-daughter relationship.
Thank you all for being here. Opening nights tonight, Break a Leg. Thanks again.
Steve. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks.
Grey Gardens, the musical, opens tonight at 8 and continues through July 30th in the Wool Studio Theater in the JCC's Steinberg Family Complex. More details are available at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis on the Air is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Kelly Moffitt, with production assistance from Aaron Dorr, Kim Oswalt, and Spencer Reed. The executive producer is Robert Peterson. Arts and culture programming on St. Louis on the Air is funded in part by the Arts and Education Council of Greater St. Louis, the Regional Arts Commission, and the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.